On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Sweet Tuesday morning came on your smile.
Tuesday.
Sun comes up, it's Tuesday morning.
Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, settle down.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Please hold your applause till the end of the show. Oh my God, it's a standing ovation. Look, everybody's standing and they're leaving. Hey, where are you going? That's not the standing ovation. No, you're not supposed to leave. This is why I don't have a studio audience. It just doesn't work out. Welcome to the program. How you doing? Good to be with you. I'm the person who does the show. My name's in the title of the damn thing, so what do you expect would happen? All right, here, this is how this is going to go down. You're going to sit down, shut up, and for about 30 minutes, I'm going to talk at you, which is disgusting, but I'm going to do that, and you're going to have a good time, and you're going to learn stuff, and it's going to be the greatest half hour you've ever spent in your life. Question is, when does that happen? Excuse me, when does that occur? All right, fine, that's enough theme music. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for coming. You're really nice. Thanks for having speakers. Otherwise, this could not be. So thank you. Coming unto me doth arth so excited, my cup runneth over with glee. And I'm talking like Shakespeare because that apparently worked for him. Did people really talk like that in the old English Shakespearean days? Did they really talk like that, or did they just talk like this? I mean, I don't think so. I think they talk like that. So pompously ridiculous. Joeth, how art thou? I don't understand what you're talking about. How art thou? Well, my name is Joe. It's not art. Oh, God. How art thou? Doth those thou be true to oneself? All right, look, just get the hell out of here. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Get an interpreter, because I don't know what you're talking. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I think they talk like that. I don't know. Is that how they ordered food in their little Elizabethan restaurants?
I thinketh upon myself that I may indulge in the grace of the life, the grace of the rife. I will partake. Doth know thyself in thy moment? How doth thy know? I will embark upon thou's beef, the beef of the Wellingtoneth. And they may come, thy will know, thy will know thou, wheneth it arrive. In meantime, as I thinketh upon thou self, I believe in no life, have the vodka martinieth, magistrate upeth, withouteth an oliveth.
I it must have been excruciatingly difficult to speak back then, or to express your love or passion for someone else. Thou art a vision of beauty upon me, with which I shall indulge uponeth. Thou knowest of the best life is not the one that you resolve upon thy life. But oh, shut the hell up, baby. Let's get to it. Come on, baby.
Shut up!
All right. Is this what you expected when you decided to listen to this? I don't think it is. I'm doubting it greatly. But, hey, what the hell. All right, I'm going to change course now. I won't talk the Elizabethan Shakespearean deal, whatever that is, because that's ridiculous. I mean, you thought that a Brooklyn accent was hard to figure out. Try that one, huh? Try that Shakespearean crap. Do you know that Shakespeare, when he wrote his plays, there were no women in the plays? Men played the part of the women. I know. Come to your own conclusions. I don't understand it either. There were women, otherwise there wouldn't be children. I know there were women, but they didn't get on the stage or something? What the hell is that? What's wrong with you people? Talk about backwards. Wow. Figure that out. Is there a reason? I could have Googled, but I don't do. I told you before on this show, I don't Google things. It's an admission of stupidity, and I won't do it. I won't go to a machine to answer my inquiries. It doesn't work like that. I might go down the library, although I won't because I'm too freaking lazy, but that's at least, you know, something that's respectable. But to sit in front of a machine and ask it questions and get answers that I shall follow till death, that doesn't make sense, and I'm referring to WebMD. Okay. Man. I wanted to talk today about how different we are. Now, you and I, we get along, right? Am I right? Sure, I don't know who the hell you are. We kind of see things the same way, usually. But most of people, at least in this country and around the world, I don't understand them. I just don't get it. You might as well be from another planet. I don't understand your deal. Not at all. Every once in a while, I'll go to New York City, to Manhattan, to the Museum of Modern Art, because my lovely lady wants to do that, and then I shall follow.
We're going to the Museum of Modern Art. Shut your mouth. We're going to go, and you're going to like it.
Okay, fine, sure. Why? Oh, yeah, you're right. I will like it. So we go there, and in the Museum of Modern Art, and they also have, I live in Massachusetts, they have a modern art thing. And that's in near Williamstown, I believe, Massachusetts. I didn't even know there was a Williamstown. I don't know. Anyway, in both these museums, they have modern art. And modern art is nothing but an interpretation of pure crap. Somebody gets a wild idea in their head, they put it on canvas, or they sculpt it, and they put it in a museum, and you're supposed to appreciate it. No, it's a piece of crap. In both museums at different times, I walked into this large room, and there was a big white canvas on the wall. And when I'm talking about white canvas, it was the size of a garage door. Okay, that's a good way to put it. It was the size of a garage door. And it was a white canvas, and it was mounted on the wall, and there were lights upon it. And right in the center, and totally white canvas, that's it, totally white canvas. And in the center of this white canvas was a red dot, no bigger than a doorknob. So you have this big white canvas, totally white, the size of a garage door, which is large, let's say even a double garage door. Whoa, that's even bigger. But a tiny little dot the size of a doorknob in the middle of the canvas, the white canvas, and that was it. And it had the artist's name on a little plaque down below the right-hand corner of the canvas. And I jotted down the artist's name because I want to know who the real douches are of society. if you think that a gigantic white canvas with a little red dot in the middle is worth putting up as art and having people go through this room where this is supposed to be a incredible piece of art, then I don't know which planet I came from, because it ain't this one. And the most interesting part of the whole thing is that these other museum goers would walk up to this area and look at this white canvas with the red dot in the middle, and they'd stare at it like for 5 minutes and look at each other and go, "That's incredible. What the hell are you talking about? How can that be incredible? Do you not understand that anybody can get a big white canvas, take a little paintbrush, do a little dot in the middle, and consider yourself a great artist? What the hell's wrong with you people?" "Ron, you don't understand art." "I do. That's not art. That's crap. That's somebody making a fool of you. This guy on the plaque, he's not an artist. No, no, he's not an artist at all. He's punking you. He's fooling you. He's laughing. He's laughing back in his home somewhere in Vermont." "Can you believe it, Margaret? So I take this white canvas. I got a little, actually it was blood, but I thought it was red paint, and I put a little dot in the middle, and then I gave it to the, and now people think it's fantastic, and they want to give me like millions of dollars for it. I just don't know what the fuck." I'm telling you, man, people are nuts. Here's the problem. I live amongst these nuts. They inhabit the planet in large numbers, not just a few, but half of them are nuts. They're ignorant idiots who have no compassion, no taste, no nothing. They're void of every single ability that makes sense. It's unbelievable. It bothers me greatly. And I don't know. I saw this thing in like two different museums, one in New York, as I said, and one in Massachusetts. I mean, it's a big piece of art, this piece of crap. But you know what? It's not the art on the wall that bothers me. It's the people that admire it and think it's fantastic. That's what bothers me. It's not Donald Trump. It's the people that idolize him. That's what bothers me. Same thing. I grew up in a world of reality. Not everybody talked to each other or anything like that, but we didn't have cell phones and all that crap. I know you've heard this from me before. It was a very simple life because nothing had been developed yet. Technology was not as advanced as it is now, to the point of ad nauseum. But we dealt with the facts that were before us, and this is the way people live their lives. Now we don't deal with facts anymore. We deal with perception. You see that over there? What is that? That's a table. To me, it's a chair. What do you mean? It's a table. It has four legs. How many legs does a chair have? Four. To me, it's a chair. But it's a table. Not to me. It's a chair. And it will always be a chair. But it makes no sense. Your table makes no sense. Oh my God. What are we doing? What are we doing? It's very, very confusing. It's not right. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is why they invented alcohol. Yeah, that's true. I mean, people drinking has gone back like centuries and eras, much larger eras than what Taylor Swift thinks an era is. Taylor, look up era on your Google machine. Yeah, you kind of like messed that up. Anyway, way back, all we know about the American Indians, but this happened around the world even before them, probably. They would sit around and smoke the peace pipe. Bullshit, that's not a peace pipe. They wanted to get high. That's what you do when you're with people. You sit down, you get high. I mean, alcohol, marijuana, whatever the case may be. But that's what they did. I mean, granted, back in those days, there wasn't much to do. Bob, what are you going to do today?
I'm going to whittle. I got a piece of wood, a twig from my backyard, and a sharp object, and I'm going to whittle it.
Whittle it into what?
A smaller twig. I don't know. I don't understand it either, but that's all we got, baby. Just twigs and sharp objects, and that's about it.
You want to write on the cave wall?
Yeah, let's draw something on the wall. I don't know.
There wasn't much to do back then. So I get it. I guess there was a lot of stress without much to do. I guess it would be stress and anxiety. But this is why they invented alcohol, is because we can't get along. We just can't. We have to go to something to take us off this plane of civility, because there is no civility. So take me away for like a couple of hours. When I get up in the morning, I'll have a headache and feel like a hangover, but at least I got away from it for a couple hours. We need to get away. So we mentally get away with these devices like alcohol. And as I've said before, and it's absolutely true, absolutely true. Remember the pandemic? Remember that thing? Oh, crazy. It was crazy. And we all survived it. Most of us, unless we didn't, right? A lot of people did not. The pandemic, remember that? And there were, I've said this before, there were three essential services that remained open: supermarkets, pharmacies, and liquor stores. And I said, screw the pharmacies, screw the supermarkets, but don't touch those damn liquor stores. Not during a pandemic. God, don't do it. And they didn't. Let me tell you how lazy I am, and then you can tell me how lazy you are. During the pandemic, I did nothing. It was a perfect opportunity for me to be creative, write a book, do some type of household chore, go through all my stuff and all my junk drawers and my closets and get rid of things I don't need. It's perfect. I had 2 years to do that. Guess what? I don't remember what I did for 2 years except sit on my ass and stare at a computer screen. You idiot, you stupid Ron. Were you any better? Probably not. Oh, there were a few people that were very productive during those 2 years because they were locked up, you know, and they had to, you know. No, locked up is, no, that's prison. They were quarantined. Thank you, that's better. Sounds more like a science fiction medical show, right? I accomplished absolutely nothing. I continued doing this show every day, so I guess I still was doing stuff. So I guess nothing changed for me. But for you, it did. And what did you do? Nothing. But my thesis today is more so I'm finding less and less connection to the human race than I did when I came into it. When they brought me into this deal for my mother's uterus, I thought this is a wonderful place. And then the older I got, the more I realized, not so much, not so much, not so much. I mean, it is what you make it, but this society is constantly trying to screw me up. It's constantly telling me to screw me up. And it does. It infiltrates us to screw us up, and we have to fight our own society in order to keep it like somewhat controllable. And thus alcohol. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I have an interesting guest who is actually going to discuss alcohol. Whoa, we're on a theme show. Well, not so much. Not really. But first, there's this.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done, carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work, I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me, waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me, naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked, I do the work naked, you pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House, Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook, where I am naked.
Jeff Allworth joins us now. He is the author of The Beer Bible. That's right. Before there was life, there was beer. And here it is. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Jeff, this is not only the first Beer Bible, it is number two. So we even have updates on the beer, I guess, because the beer world is changing rapidly, isn't it?
It really is, and actually, it's nice to talk to you, the kind of the epicenter of change that sparked this new edition started right there in New England. So, yeah, it's appropriate that I'd be talking to you.
It is appropriate, and I am the catalyst for you writing the book, quite obviously. Beers, my God, when I was growing up, there was just were a couple of brands that were very popular. Now there's all kinds of craft beers. And what's the difference between a craft beer and a beer that most people might be used to?
There's not really a fundamental difference. Mm. Beer is beer. one of the foundational experiences I had when I was writing about beer was going to St. Louis to the big Budweiser brewery. Yeah. And having traveled all over Europe already and seeing small breweries and mid-sized breweries and, 400-year-old breweries, walking into that brewery, and expecting to see, I don't know what I expected to see, but something like lab men in lab coats, synthesizing beer somehow. Yeah. No, it was just a brewery. They're just making beer. They're making a familiar kind of beer that is maybe not that interesting to a lot of people, but it's just beer. The craft beer movement, when it came along, was an antidote, much in the way that, good cheese was an antidote to Velveeta or Starbucks was an antidote to Folgers. Craft beer was an antidote to mass market lagers.
Yes.
We had, artisans making batches of beer in these little vessels and making them out of whole ingredients and in traditional ways. Yeah. And that's how it got started. And, they were very proud of what they did. And the word craft beer was a way of distinguishing what they were doing from the large brewers. But fundamentally, it's all beer.
I think the craft, IPA, as it was called, they kind of lit the spark underneath the larger manufacturers in the sense of having peanut butter flavored beer, chocolate flavored beer, similar to what happened with the vodkas. There were no flavored vodkas at a point, and now it's, you can get every flavor under the sun, and every manufacturer is in the game. And so it's like opened the door, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, capitalism is a funny thing.
Yes.
Always. It tends to go towards the mainstream, but the mainstream becomes boring after a while, and then you need to feed that with new innovation. Mm-hmm. So craft beer is sort of like the minor leagues in a way. It's where all the talent comes from.
Interesting. Very interesting. The book itself, The Beer Bible, is about the size of the Bible, Jeff. it's quite an undertaking. It's chock full of everything you can imagine about beer, the history thereof, every type, where it comes from. And there are also some pretty interesting illustrations that go way back and kind of give you a love affair that people have with beer.
Yeah, I hope I reflected that love affair. Beer has been around. The more we learn about beer, the more we realize it was around for thousands of years before humans settled down to start civilization. It's it's one of the most ancient things humans have done. We've had this love affair for a long time. It's not just a product. It's a life of drinking and making the beer and growing the ingredients. People feel about beer very differently than they feel about, you know, typical consumer products. They have a real romance around it. So I did try to capture all that. And it's, of course, it's ancient. So a lot of the traditions go back, you know, as really as far as we can see.
Did it start in Germany, actually, because we're so familiar with the European beers?
You know, it's going to be hard to identify exactly where the first beer was brewed, but the earliest evidence we have is in an area that's now in Turkey. There's an archaeological dig that goes back to 10,000 BC there, at a place called Göbekli Tepe, and it was a feasting site, and people would come together periodically, and they found evidence of beer there. And this is, you know, this is 5,000 years before civilization started. So whether that's the oldest or just the oldest we have evidence for, it's hard to say, but it's ancient. And wherever grains have grown on the planet, people have made beer. Yeah. So it's part of who we are.
I was taken by the first page of your book. It is so sincere that I nearly choked up. You dedicate the book to a very special person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad.
Yeah.
He, you know, he was, like so many dads, he drank mass market lagers. Uh-huh. You know, I grew up and he would often have a can of beer. And when I was a little kid, he let me sample his beer. You know, most mm-hmm. people have a similar story.
Sure.
For most people, they didn't like the taste of the beer. I think maybe something, you know, foreshadowing a future event. I actually really liked the taste of the beer. Then, you know, later I didn't put this in the book, but, you know, when I first snuck beer, he caught me and he said, well, you know, I got caught. I don't know why you thought you'd get away with this.
Yeah.
So we have a great connection and I owe a lot to that man.
It's just that connection that you had, when you expressed that in the first page of the book, that's what some things do in life. You go back to these moments where a parent introduces you, your first beer was with your father. That's kind of like, wow, that's life, man. That's not beer necessarily. It's life. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I would ask you what your favorite beer is, but probably not appropriate unless you want to answer.
You are correct. It's impossible for me to just choose one. And the more I write about them, the more I appreciate them, and I feel like they're all my favorites.
Yeah.
So yeah, I couldn't guess.
Yeah, your reviews are incredible. Sports Illustrated, Food and Wine, Beer Advocate—they're all calling this the Bible that it is, and it is the beer Bible. And if you're into beer, know anybody that has, this is indeed the Bible. It's a religious piece of work is what it is. Jeff, it's fascinating. It's available everywhere, I assume.
Yeah, it is. It should be available at your local indie or at the big online sellers of course.
And how do people follow you and keep in touch and website and all that kind of social talk?
All right. Well, you can find me at Beervana on Twitter or Jeff.Allworth on Instagram, or you can go to my website, beervanablog.com, and there's all my writing, links to my book, and my upcoming book tour, which will take me to New England. So if you want to see me in the Boston area or up in Maine, I will have stops there.
Wonderful. Jeff Allworth, it's been a pleasure speaking to you today. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guest. Really not. I don't drink beer, by the way. It gives me too much gas, so I can't. The only beer that I drink is Guinness, because it's like a creamy kind of beer. But that ale-y kind of stuff, not for me, my friends. No. But to each his own. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. Oh, it's going to be so brand new, you won't believe it. I might repeat some of the words like and or but or things like that, you know, common words that we use every day. I mean, I might say those, but in a different context. So that'll be different. Have yourselves a wonderful day, or at least perceive that it will be. You know what I'm saying? See, now this is how I tie the entire subject of the show together. I wish you peace.